Chapter 8. A Trial with a Smile. The next morning began with a brief series of howl screeches, acoustically representing the dying moments of the entrance gate hinges. Considering the gate was not even closed, let alone locked, it would be safe to say whoever they were, these were not your run-of-the-mill guests. Not that I'm suggesting guests should be allowed to run the mill. In the house, everybody fell out of everybody's bed, simultaneously cursing Leonardo's experimental cocktails and colouring the air with a shower of the very latest and fashionable Renaissance expletives. They all crowded onto the balcony just in time to see a frightful sight. Into the courtyard was marching a score-strong squadron of the Pope's meanest fac troops, heavily armoured and wearing regulation religious accoutrements, with terror accessories, which included a sort of Halloween hooded white sheet, adorned tastefully with dripping red Death to Al Ye Blasphemers cross. They were led by a man, trumping even their magnificent first impression, courtesy of the tall, black fingernail stallion he was riding. As if all that weren't enough, stopping just outside the gates, rolled an enormous black tarpaulin, four and more wheeler, pulled by six of the meanest looking bullocks this side of the Black Madonna. On the side of the wagon was painted Papal Inquisitional Services and a type of monkish smiley, bearing the logo A Trial with a Smile. Below this were stempled several rows of brightly coloured little symbols, pictograms of crossed logs burning, each presumably representing a witch or heretic they had hunted down. The rows continued with just as many more profiles of the same symbol, in ghostly grey, marking out their quarterly target. This was the Madonna of all church terror, a mobile unit of confession auditors. "And this is not a good," whispered Leonardo out of the corner of his mouth, while he smiled and waved at the commander from the balcony of the first floor. "I wonder how they have found us." "Who is that man?" asked Sean, meaning the commander, who had dismounted and was striding towards them across the courtyard of the house.
"It's a Cesare Borgia," sighed Leonardo grimly. "I'm afraid this is probably the worst way to wake up at their ease."
"Why is that?"
"Either he's come with the Inquisition to burn us all alive, or something far worse."
"Worse?"
"Yes. He may have found a summer worker for me."
"Why is that worse?"
"You don't know a Cesare like I know a Cesare."
"Working for the church means stopping all brain activity," explained Luca. "They already know everything there is to know."
"But you're a churchman," said Sean. "You're dressed as a monk."
"I know," shrugged Luca. "I find it hard to kick the habit."
Cesare Borgia was now standing directly beneath the balcony. He was in his mid-twenties, tall, and would have even passed for handsome, if it weren't for the considerable scarring from disease and underestimated enemies. And he wore a crown, an iron crown. He smiled up at Sean. A monk-robed clerk shuffled up bookishly. On his back was strapped, possibly even nailed, a large wooden writing board. He bent over so that Cesare could use him as a desk. Another clerk nervously laid out a document, a quill, and inkpot, and pulled back hastily as if he expected to be beaten for his efforts. Cesare instead read from it, quickly, monotonedly, formally, boredly, and professional indifferently, hardly glancing up at the people on the balcony.
"Evil sinners, I bid you good morning. Do you swear to sell our truth, our whole truth, poke your eyes out, hope to die? I warn you that everything you say will be taken down and used against you in a place of torture."
Last rite, thus read, without waiting for an answer, he then signed the document, thereby clocking in as duty quizmaster, and the clerk scurried away. Cesare now pulled out a parchment roll, took off a blood-red ribbon, and unrolled it. Some of the soldiers had brass instruments, and made an awful attempt at a showy fanfare. Cesare announced, "Time to play Quiz for Your Life. You have just 60 seconds to give 10 correct answers to these burning questions. Any incorrect or incomplete answers, and the contestant will be eliminated." Leonardo surreptitiously pulled up his sleeve, where he had a parchment of cheat notes.
"What's that?" Sean whispered to Luca. "FGAs, frequently given answers. These are FAQ troops, as in frequently asked questions, to test people's unthinking adherence to totally mindless dogma. If you answer correctly, you lose your stake.
You mean win your stake?
Not this kind of stake.
He indicated the portable barbecue the troops were unloading from the wagon. As a tease, Cesare allowed them to think he was going to read the standard FAQs. Then he smiled and put his scroll away. He clicked his fingers, and one of the clerk monks shuffled forward with another black-bordered scroll. They could just make out the letters F-U on the cover.
"Oh no, we're doomed."
"Why? What's that?" asked the terrified Chorn.
"It's an upgrade of the facts, FAQs. These are FUQs, frequently unanswered questions. Upgrade 2. Its acronym would never pass the censors."
Patroli shook his head ruefully.
"I've heard rumours, but nobody has been able to hack them yet."
"Hack them?" cried Chorn.
"Yes. As a failed candidate is being burned, he can communicate the questions to others through a kind of coffin code called hacking."
Leonardo listened to the first question, something about, "Who then tieth the bootlaces of our lord on the day the fifth sheep was verily?" Cesare paused meaningfully. "Chorn." Chorn counted to the fifth person on the balcony, and sure enough, it was him.
"Time to retreat," said Leonardo, and shooed them all back inside the house.
They stood in silence while they listened as some of the confession auditors began to put together a kit model battering ram, reading from and arguing over an instruction etching.
"Come on, Leonardo," said Luca,
his voice edging along the scale towards level 4 hysterical.
"You're the ranking genius here. Think of something."
"And you're the senior genius. You think of something," was Leonardo's vaguely panic-tinged reply. "Will you two stop bickering about who's got the biggest brain and get us out of this mess? We've got to go, go, go," called an angry and terrified Pao.
Leo and Luca stared at him and then simultaneously clicked their fingers and pointed to each other as they said together, "The hexa-go-go."
"The hexa-what?"
called Jenny, pulling herself free of Pao, who had been whispering urgings to her and trying to hold her back.
"I am afraid that we have deceived you, all of you,"
Leonardo explained apologetically to Pao and Jenny.
"You see, last night we were afraid that you wouldn't allow us to experiment directly on your timer eggs."
At the mention of the eggs, Pao recoiled suspiciously, and his hand went instinctively to his coat pocket. Chorn took note of it. They could hear that the fact troops had finished their union regulation prayer break. Leonardo continued quickly.
"So we arranged the chairs so that by sitting there, Jenny and Pao, with your eggs on you, you were to complete the 6 principal points of the Vitruvian hexagram."
"In recent wave mysticism, it's called a hexagogo," explained Luca. "It's a trick we used to play on the apprentice witches behind the alchemy lab."
Leonardo continued.
"As you can see, we used porphyry for the fireplaces in this room. Porphyry that contains the eggs you use to timeride. These eggs contain a substance alchemists call tempus albumen."
"How do you know they contain an egg?" asked Chorn.
"You can sense it. You see, when someone is closer to an egg, he or she gets visions. Sometimes glimpses of ghosts, other times insights of another time, or perhaps of all a time. And that is why oracles and other professional outsiders get such rave reviews, and where you get your eggs, am I correct?"
Leonardo asked Jenny and Pao.
"Don't you get the amour to steal the eggs for you from oracles, who possess and pass on hereditary knowledge of where to locate them?"
"Yes, no," answered hedged Jenny, Pao, helpfully, evasively. "After all, they're hardly likely to complain, are they? Who can they to?" smiled Pao vulpinely.
"Since the minimum number to activate the power of the hexagogo is 6, went on Luca, "we got you to sit here and over there, in these empty spaces between the fireplaces, so the hexagogo would be complete."
"That's brilliant, Luca, Leo," Jenny applauded, smiling appreciatively and looking every inch the Mona Lisa.
"Sneaks," sulked Pao.
Jenny suddenly went serious. "Just a minute. I was sure of it.
You can remember our last visit, Leo, can't you? You can see it through the eggs.
Leonardo did not have time to answer, as Pau suddenly grabbed Jenny's wrists roughly and said, "Time to go, Jenny. Get out your egg."
"What? And leave the others to the confession auditors? Pau, we can't." "Look, Jenny, ever since Sean appeared, following us like this, Cespuglia has been after us, capturing us one by one."
"You mean Cesare Borgia is?"
"Of course he is. He has Stinto and Amour in his helmet, which, if I don't miss my guess, is now that crown Cesare is wearing. He's come for us now, but what he really wants is the watch. Because it is the watch that is disrupting the timeline, don't you see?
The FAC troops are the inverter brakes. They want to stop the timeline collapsing. That's why they're helping Cespuglia."
"But the watch has gone," said Jenny, indicating the pedestal and shimmery image of the device in the center of the room.
"So let's give Cespuglia Sean," added Pau.
"He's the one drawn to it. Then they'll both leave us in peace. Now come on, we have to get to Elf first and get him to safety."
"And Sean?"
"He's not one of us. Leave him."
Pau began wrestling with Jenny to get her egg out of the purse.
"Leave her alone, you great bully," called Sean,
racing over to try to pull Pau off Jenny. Pau spun around and swung at Sean as hard as he could with all the fury fear generates. But a hard punch is a pre-announced punch, and Sean ducked it easily, tackling Pau in a way, as the wrong kind of footballer, he'd always wanted to try. Pau was quickly on top of him. When he swung to hit at Sean again, Jenny tried to arrest his arm, but the force of it knocked her backwards. She dropped her purse and the egg rolled out across the floor. Dazed, she stumbled, first forwards, then backwards, and into the pedestal, which began to topple. Pau screamed, "Jenny!" Abandoned Sean, jumped up and ran over to her. He reached her just as she followed the falling pedestal, and they went into a kind of threesome tango to end up spiral-limbed on the floor. The hiatus that followed was broken by the sound of the battering ram finding its target. Luca helped Sean up, and Leonardo Jenny.
"Are you a hurt, Jenny?" he asked, concerned.
"No, I'm not, Leo." "Leo, it's good to see you, and Luca. Ahem, who is this handsome boy?"
Luca, Sean and Leonardo stared at Madonna Lisa. Her husband jumped up.
"I say, what was I doing on the floor? Is it a party? Hope so."
"Francesco, Lisa, aia," began Leonardo, perplexed.
The house shook again.
"Who's that knocking?" asked Lisa.
"For heaven's sake, Francesco, don't stand around like a garden fence. Go and let them in."
"Sean," said Leonardo, "I would like you to meet Signor Francesco del Giocondo, and this is his charming wife, Madonna Lisa."
"Pleased to meet you, my lady, sir."
"What is happening, Leo? Who are those men in the courtyard?"
"The church are making inquiries, my lady."
"Oh, those pesky priests. Tell them we have donated already."
"I don't wish to alarm you, Francesco," said Leonardo. "But they are confession auditors, coming to torture and burn us alive."
"I see. Hmm. You always manage to come up with something new every time we see you, don't you, Leo?"
"Francesco," said Lisa, "I don't want to be burnt. I've only just arrived. Tell the nasty men to go away."
"Yes, dear."
"And not to step on the flower beds."
"Yes, dear."
"And to wipe their boots if they do break in."
"Yes, dear."
"Oh, just look at my hair. I look awful with it down. I can't be burnt and looking like this. Francesco, this is all your fault."
While she had her mouth full of hair clips putting up her hair, Francesco took the opportunity to pull Leonardo aside.
"For goodness sake, Leonardo, we can't be tortured by just anyone like this. It just won't do. What would the neighbours say?
And you know what Lisa is like about uninvited guests. Can't you do something?"
"I would, but to do so I would need another egg," said Leo, holding up Jenny's, which had rolled to the wall. "Surely this is a stranger time to be maketh of an omelette?"
"It seems Pau used his," said a last will and testament stage Luca, frisking Francesco's pockets, causing him to giggle and squirm. The sounds of the battering ram being re-hoisted for another inquiry at the door came to them.
"Oh, I wouldn't say that," said Sean, and held up Pau's egg. "I saw where he kept it, and got into a wrestle with him to get it off him without his noticing. I used to do it with Pappy when I wanted the notebook in which he kept his passwords."
Well done, Sean, exclaimed Luca. Quick, put it in the enclave there. That's right. Leo, put Jenny's over there, and hey presto.
Right, said Francesco, as he looked from one to the other of his four-room companions. Clearly you've all gone mad as horses. And he sat in a huff, trying to remember if the payments on his fire insurance were up to date.
So, Jenny has gone, said Sean sadly. How?
It would seem that as we solve one piece of the mystery, another piece appears, said Leo. We can only assume there was enough essence left over from last night's hexagogo for them to travel. They are, after all, merely self-entities, suggestions of people.
Not really alive, said Sean, quoting Cespuglio bitterly. I don't believe that.
Luca had gone to the window to peek out timidly.
Leonardo, they have stopped battering on the door. Perhaps they wish to parley.
Francesco, why is there a very small clock and a ribbon hovering in midair in the centre of the room? Asked Lisa.
The watch, said Luca and Leonardo.
They ran to it and found the image was still exactly where it had been. They lifted the pedestal and replaced it under it.
Interesting, said Leonardo.
What is, maestro? Said Sean.
The hexagogo is in a place. Yet a looker and I are unaffected.
So am I, said Sean,
coming over and moving his hand through and around the watch.
So it hasn't worked, said Luca. They'll be able to get in.
Flaming shame, said Francesco.
Luca went to one of the eggs and adjusted it slightly.
Any signal yet?
He asked hopefully.
Leo was at the window. I am afraid this is it, he said. They all joined him and looked down. The fact troops were launching a final attack on the door. The ram hit home, followed by the sound of the door crashing in. And Lisa screamed. So did Luca, actually, but okay. Instead of metal boots on the stairs, however, they were surprised to hear spine-curdling and blood-tingling screams. The next they knew, they were witnessing the grim scene of a pile of disused white sheets, presumably containing a dozen ex-United Inquisitors, fall past the window into an orderly but demilitarized sudden stop on the ground beneath the balcony. Standing in the courtyard below, when he had seen what had happened, Cesare Borgia screamed, "Fantastic!" grabbed one of the other fac soldiers and pushed him unwillingly through the door aperture. A brief scream from the roof. Then two objects fell. One was a skeleton in armor, and the other was a complementary mass of soft human bits in a previously white robe. Down in the courtyard, Cesare called, "Hey, this is fun. Any more volunteers?" The few remaining fac troops backed off with a devil-did-care look.
"What is going on, Leonardo?" cried Lisa. "Look what those intrusive men are doing to my flower beds."
"We have built a time shield around the house, much alike the shield around your watch, Sean, that prevents it from aging or corroding."
Sean looked out of the window, too. What he saw was absolute chaos. Besides the bodies of Inquisitors, there was half a bulldozer just inside the fence. A large number of black ravens were dancing at to be or not to be on and off the roof. And a terrified cat appeared out of nowhere and raced across the courtyard to some alternative nowhere best known to itself.
"Sean, I think you had better go too," said Leonardo.
"But if I use an egg, that will break the hexagogo, and you and Dr. Pacioli will be left defenseless. Come with me. It is not safe here."
"Actually, I think we will be perfectly safe. I think I now know what Cesare wants. In any case, I don't think we can travel through time. That is for time riders, and the consciousnesses of special people."
"What makes me special?"
"You're not a being where you belong. You see, Sean, for some time now, I have suspected that a tooth has fallen out of the cog of time. And that is my guess as to why you have been cast adrift, and why you are drawn to the watch. Like two pieces of debris in the sea. The same forces of waves that push them together, the next moment pull them apart. But nature is clever. It is trying to resolve the enigma. My guess is that you are part of that attempt. Do as she wants. Follow her instinct, not your own."
"Are you sure?" asked Sean.
"Of course not. But we can attest the theory. Like this.
Before anyone could stop him, Leo strode out onto the balcony.
Maestro, no, called Sean.
The hated voice of Cesare Borgia cried, fire, and a volley of crossbow bolts flew towards Leonardo, standing unafraid on the balcony. But just as the deadly bolts were crossing over the stone balustrade of the balcony, they disappeared. Some simultaneous thuds and screams from the courtyard informed them that the last of the Inquisition fact troops were dropping dead, the bolts impossibly protruding from their chests. Cesare Borgia looked far from angry. If anything, he looked jubilant.
Leonardo, I may have a job for you.
Thought as much, muttered Leo, with saddle sore wisdom.
All the invertebrates are dead now, so you cannot speak openly.
If this insight took Cesare by surprise, he revealed nothing.
I want the eggs, the Tempus albumen. Why? As weapons. Cannons shatter the eggs, so you will also design me an arbalist, a giant crossbow, that can fire the eggs inside the walls of my enemies, so they can be banished not only from my sight, but from all time.
You create masterworks, Leonardo, so you will understand. My masterworks were Nero, Caligula, he touched the crown, Constantine, Attila, Charlemagne, Genghis. Whenever there was savagery to be had, I was there. Have you not understood yet? Cespuglia has never left the earth, ever.
Is Sean there? Sean, Sean sheep, come out and be fleeced, my little lamb. Come to the embrace of the merciful Cespuglia.
Sean came out onto the balcony. He was not afraid. Leo's courage was infectious.
Hello, Cespuglia. I hear you have been having fun wrecking history.
Do you know what my favourite weapon against my former allies is?
I can imagine several contenders, replied Sean, noting the mileage on the portable stake.
I, or my delightful little sister Lucretia, give them Cantarella, a form of arsenic. I call it the liquor of succession.
Will you too, old Leonardo, like Socrates, receive the golden cup of the Borgias?
If that is to be my fate, I do not fear it.
Ooh, delicious.
And that defiance makes your corruption all the more appetizing. I can taste it already.
Come now, Leonardo.
He pointed with a mail-gloved hand down the road towards the war-torn Italy.
The road to infamy beckons us.
Leonardo, Luca, and Sean re-entered the ballroom.
Maestro, begged Sean, but stopped when he saw Leo shake his head.
Then this is goodbye?
Sean failed to hold back his tears.
Leonardo took an egg from its enclave. Sean looked to Luca for an ally, but saw only resignation there too.
Goodbye, Sean. Bearer of the watch, guardian of the Speaky Celesti, Cespuglia must never be allowed to find and destroy these things. They are our only light in this new dark age. Look for the signs and you will understand.
Leo took Sean gently by the shoulders.
There is so much that we could have said and done together, you and I. But I will tell you this. I have no family except the family of scientists through the ages. And we can never be separated. Our thoughts are passing forwards and backwards through the time barrier with ease. For us, time is of no importance.
Leonardo held him with his penetrating eyes.
So can it be for us.
He let the egg fall.